I'm Marty Moscoe-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Sophia Ballin is a staff writer at the Philadelphia Inquirer and the creator of the storytelling project Black History Untold, Joy. She asks readers to share a story, a photo, a video of their moment of Black joy. The paper featured stories every day this month of local African Americans talking about a meaningful experience that inspired them, made them feel proud about themselves and their community. This is a project of Philadelphia Media Network and WHYY, which are co-hosting an event tonight at the station, and I will tell you more about that a little later in the hour. In the meantime, we want your story of Black joy. Call or text the comment line, 267-405-2006. That's 267-405-2006. And joining us is Sophia Ballin, and nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me, Marty. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good.
So what was the response? Because we're at the end of February. What has been the response to this project?
The response has truly been phenomenal. Really, really phenomenal. I think people love the theme and the focus of Black joy. I've been reading the stories. People have been submitting it just yesterday because, you know, I have the project where I have the participants that were selected who share their Black joy moments. But also we probably have like up to almost 15 people who just like contributed their own stories and photos and videos. And we still have emails and more participants just wanting to be included and wanting to share their joy and be a part of this kind of storytelling. So it's been really, really great. And it's been really just inspiring me and motivating me as well, and bringing more, each story brings more joy to my life as well.
In fact, yeah. Tell us your story of Black joy.
I think every Black person has multiple Black joy moments. So even
I hope so. I'm just saying that as the resident white person here, but no, go ahead, Sophia.
Yeah. Yeah. So I know for a lot of people, even asking them, they were like, oh, I don't know, you know, which one to focus in on. So I said, you know, whatever feels the most prominent, the most recent. So for me, I chose one of the most recent / prominent ones. And it was the reason why I chose joy as the theme this year. So last year when I launched the project, it was Black History Untold, same name. And I asked 33 people what they didn't learn in school about Black history, how they learned it, and how it impacts them today. The project launched at the same time that I went to Trinidad for Carnival, which is a huge like Caribbean celebration. And during that time, it was the same time that I like to call it the public display of Black death, where you saw a lot of Black men and women being either killed or brutalized at the hands of the police. And I think that that does something to the Black psyche. So I traveled to Trinidad at the same time that this was going on, and I was surrounded by all these Black and brown people just celebrating and loving their culture and who they are, just unapologetically and just being vibrant. And I said, I love this. I love us, and I wouldn't be anyone else if I had the choice. And I thought to myself, you know, I think every Black person has that moment, right? You realize that, okay, I'm Black. This means something in society. It comes with challenges. But then there's also those moments where you're like, you know what? I kind of like who I am. You know what I mean? Whether it's the swag surfing, whether it's, you know, seeing Obama get elected, you know, just the sense of community that we have. So I said, you know, I want to delve into that. I want to ask people, investigate that and ask them what their Black joy moment was and provide tangible stories for people to pull from when they're in their own low moments.
Sophia, this is Black History Untold. Does that mean that Black joy is not talked about enough?
Sometimes, no. I think sometimes it isn't talked about enough. I think, you know, I do think it's very important to highlight the struggle. Some people even talk about the struggle being a part of joy and service being a part of joy. But sometimes I don't think that we talk about the joy so much. And I think because of that, being Black becomes labeled almost or misinterpreted as a burden, when I don't think that it is. I think that being Black is one of the greatest gifts that God has ever given me, being part of this culture and this amazing network of people. So I just want to remind people of that, because I think sometimes that is forgotten. And I think that with a lot of that's going on in the news, like I said before, I think that it does something to the Black psyche, and it can get you down and just make you feel like we're always struggling, we're always having to fight, we're always going through this. But I want people to acknowledge the joy around them.
Are there moments of Black joy that you've had in the U.S. that you didn't have to go to Trinidad to have that experience of
oh
self-love,
gosh.
For instance,
yes,
Sophia?
Yes, I've had a lot. If I can think of some, just any moments where I'm with my friends, my friends, whenever we have like our alumni weekends and we're all together and they play swag surf and everybody just links arms and they play swag and I surf. And it's like about 50 people just swaying to the song. And that's just one of those songs that's so central, I think, to young Black youth. So it's just very celebratory and I feel so connected. So there are tons of moments that I also have in the States of Black joy.
Well, so
yeah.
I appreciate you joining us today on Radio Times. I know you'll be at the station tonight with our other guest, James Peterson, talking more about Black joy. And Sophia Ballin, thanks for joining us.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Again, she's a staff writer at the Philadelphia Inquirer. Well, let me introduce not only James Peterson, but our other two guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. James Peterson, Director of Africana Studies, Associate Professor of English at Lehigh University, a contributor to MSNBC, and host of WHYY's podcast, The Remix. And James Peterson, nice to have you back with us.
Thanks,
on Radio Times. Nice to have you with us. Also with us is Ariel Johnson. She is the owner of Amalgam Comics and Coffee House. That's in Kensington, the Kensington part of Philadelphia. The first African-American woman to open a comic store on the East Coast of the United States. Ariel Johnson, a great pleasure. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you, Marty.
You're very welcome. And also with us is Camila Rashab, and she's the founder and president of the Muslim Wellness Foundation. She also serves as the Fellow for Spirituality, Wellness, and Social Justice at the University of Pennsylvania. She was a guest on Radio Times a couple of months ago. Nice to have you back with us on the show, Camila.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. All right. I want all of your moments, your stories of Black joy. James Peterson, I'll start with you.
Well, first, I'm experiencing a moment of Black joy right now just to be here with Ariel and with Camila and Sophia as well. Sophia, props to Sophia Ballin, who is a journalistic visionary, a multimedia talent, incredible writer, and visionary. I was a part of the series last year, and obviously I kicked off the series this year. But Ariel and Camila, I have connections to both of these beautiful women
here
today.
There's
a lot of love in this room today.
Because I feel it.
I'm a big comic book head, and you know, I just love comics, and I think what comic books have done as a form for people of color has really been understudied and not thought about enough, and so props to you and just kudos to what you're doing. The work you're doing is really important. And Camila and I haven't seen Camila in a long time, but we go way back to the Penn days and to see what she's doing now and how she's serving and working in the community. This is a moment of black joy. It is a moment of black joy for me. But you'll notice in Sophia's comments, she talked a lot about music. In my piece, this is funny because my piece dropped, I think, the day before President Trump talked about Frederick Douglass as if he was still alive today. And in my piece, I talk about the moment where Frederick Douglass is basically critiquing folks who hear the sorrow songs that enslaved Africans sing as some indication of them being happy. And I kind of riff on that and play on that a little bit because, of course, the sorrow songs are what they were. They were people lamenting their physical and mental condition in a moment where this nation was dedicated in destroying their humanity. But how that has sort of been rearranged, particularly in the spiritual tradition of Black theology, to create a lot of joy and a lot of spaces of joy for Black folks in the 20th and 21st century. And so I think music is really key to how we think about Black joy.
Camila, what's your story? And I read your piece in the Philadelphia Inquirer.
Yes. So it was a difficult question to answer. But when I thought about it, I'd say, you know, I could say it's my children, of course. I feel like they're my greatest accomplishment. But the moment in particular that kind of swiftly came to mind was the moment that my husband and I jumped the broom at our wedding ceremony. And I remember hearing this quote that remarriage is the triumph of hope over experience. And I said, that certainly is the case. but it was the, we were trying so intentionally to incorporate elements of, you know, what it means for us to be Black and what it means for us to be Muslim. You know, my husband is a member of a fraternity, Omega Psi Phi, and so he wanted to, you know, kind of incorporate elements of that. And so I thought this ceremony, this moment of also jumping the broom, and that it meant that as enslaved Africans, we're not able to kind of publicly and unapologetically declare their love for one another and to be with one another in that way. And so the broom became a way for us to mark our, you know, having a ceremony which marks, you know, this is the present and how we're oriented towards the future. And I have the photographer caught the moment that we are jumping over. And I swear, my husband is like 12 inches off the ground. I said, he ain't playing around. He's going to get over that broom. He's not going to stumble. And
I assume you made it over the broom.
I did too. I certainly. And we're holding hands, and kind of the look that the photographer captured on our faces was just like, we did it. We made it. And we hope that the ancestors are happy with us making it too.
I'll go back to both of you. Arielle, let me get you in on the conversation. What's your story?
I would say, you know, I also have multiple moments of Black joy, thankfully. But the one I think that I think stands out for me as I was on my journey of understanding myself and loving myself, really, was when I did the big chop, which is when you cut off all of your permed hair, if you had a perm. So the moment when I cut off like the remnants of the processed hair and like fully embraced my hair as it grew out of my head, and you know, so I had my little fro, my little poof is what I called it. But it was like the first step on a journey to loving myself. You know, we live in a society that does not uphold Black beauty. It doesn't uphold Black women. And so, you know, growing up as a young Black girl, you know, you're struggling with this idea of like loving yourself and liking how you look and thinking that you are okay, that you are beautiful. And there's a lot of pressure to
sure.
do things that, you know, make you look different than you look. So that moment of like fully embracing that and like learning my hair, because I feel like I hadn't seen my real hair in years, you know, mm-hmm. so learning how it moved, how it worked, what, you know, what
really
to do,
powerful.
What not to do, you know, to even respecting it, understanding that you can't always control it. It's going to do what it's going to do some days, like, you know, and it was just like a really, really beautiful experience.
Well, I should say, I mean, unfortunately, we're on the radio here, so people don't get to see what your hair looks like. Wow.
Can you
it is amazing. Can you describe it for it? We're almost up in a break here, but go ahead, Arielle.
Oh, yeah. One of the things before I opened the shop, I said, well, when I get to a place where I know the shop is going to open to celebrate my independence and my image being my own, I can look like however I want. I said, well, the first thing I'm going to do is dye my hair pink. So I used to have actual locks, and they were pink and purple and green and blue. Oh, wow. But then I wanted to revisit my poof so I could do like play around with my hair. So currently my hair is in afro form, but right now I have faux locks, and they are blonde and pink. So I'm just having some fun with color without actually damaging my hair.
A great solution. Let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. Let me quickly reintroduce everybody. That's Arielle Johnson. She's the owner of Amalgam Comics and Coffee House, which is in the Kensington section of Philadelphia. We'll be talking more about comic book characters. Also with us, Camila Rashad. She's the founder and president of the Muslim Wellness Foundation, and again serves as the fellow for spirituality, wellness, and social justice at the University of Pennsylvania. Also with us, James Peterson, director of Africana Studies, also MSNBC contributor, and more importantly, host of WHYY's podcast, The Remix. We are talking about Black joy in this hour of Radio Times. We're going to play some comments and get back to our conversation. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with my guests about their moments of Black joy. We'll be talking more about what happens beyond those moments and how they share those experiences with their community. We want your moments of Black joy, and you can either call us or text us at our comment line. That phone number, 267-405-2006. You can also email us, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. I just have to read a comment from producer Trine Nuri. She says, for me, Black joy is seeing my children laughing and reading bedtime stories. So very, very nice. Let me play a caller who called into our comment line. This is Ayana.
My name is Ayana. My experience of Black joy is the wonderful legacy of growing up in the African-American church. It sort of is like growing up in a conservatory of music. And so the experience that I have on a Sunday morning of listening to him, spirituals, all of these things connect me to my past, and I find great joy in that.
That's a great call. Ayana, thanks for calling into Radio Times. James, you talked about music, but obviously music and church and religion, so powerful, and
yeah,
such,
I mean,
history there,
there
too.
There is tremendous. I mean, it can't account for all of Black joy, but certainly it can account for a good share of it. And I think, you know, I study hip hop and think about hip hop music in a lot of different critical ways and find a lot of joy in experiencing new music. And it's interesting to point this out. You know, culture can't always sort of change our political condition. But culture can empower Black folks, and culture can direct Black folks. And most importantly, culture can inspire folks. And so what the caller is talking about is the inspiration. You have a visceral response. If you've ever been in a Black church, when hymns are being sang and when the choir is performing, there can be an actual visceral response to that. And I think some folks are associating that with Black joy, which I think makes a lot of sense.
You know, Camila, both you and James work on a university campus. You're at the, yes, University of Pennsylvania. Do you have a sense, even as you talk to young people, young students there, about what Black joy means to them? And I ask that whether it's another way of talking about Black liberation or Black power. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that another way to reframe?
Absolutely. There is actually, I'm proud to say, a new student organization on campus called Pensabolo. It's for Black Muslim students and their allies, and really wanted to have a conversation about the intersection of race and religion and culture, and what it means to have to deal with anti-Black racism as well as anti-Muslim bigotry. And I have to say, again, being with those young Black Muslim people, just to kind of see how those things, like perhaps we haven't grown up in a tradition of being in church, but just how rhythm kind of resonates, and just the joy of being with one another, of finding one another, because on a campus as large as University of Pennsylvania, you may not know where all the Black Muslims are. You know, it's like, are they at Umoja? Are they at Maku? Are they, you know, in involved in Pan-African work? And so when I witnessed the process of them finding each other, that gave me so much joy. They're like, where have you been? I've missed you. You know, we can kind of walk this journey together. And it is really beautiful to see.
Era, let me turn back to you and talk a bit about comics, certainly Black comics. And I know Storm was a really important character for you as a young Black girl growing up.
It was. She was the first Black woman superhero that I ever saw. Mm-hmm. And that was at age 11.
Wow.
So,
and it was sort of realizing that such a character existed in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I've always enjoyed superpowers and things like that, but, you know, growing up watching Thundercats and He-Man and things like that, there weren't any Black characters, and especially no Black women characters. So I always say I feel like I probably would have grown out of my love of comics had I not met Storm. Because, again, there's a disconnect there, because even as a child, I always felt like I was watching other people's adventures unfold, and I was just witnessing. But, you know, Storm made me feel like I could be a part of the action. Like, I remember, you know, probably being maybe older than I should have been doing this.
We can all confess, but go ahead.
But just like kind of playing outside by myself, just running around on windy days specifically so I could pretend that I was the one making it windy. And it was just so much fun. And I don't think I ever had an experience like that with wanting to be a character that I saw, you know. So and just, you know, Storm is a fantastic character, and she is, you know, a Black woman, but she is, you know, she is her own person. She is a leader.
She is a goddess.
She's been worshipped. She's a powerhouse. She's a mother. Like, she's just all of these things. Like, no one can box her in, you know, and you know, she is not to be trifled with, because she'll let you know real quick who she is. Like, you know, she's been a thief. You know, she's lived on the streets. Like, she's just fantastic, and not anybody's sidekick or any trope that you've ever seen before. Like, she is like one of a kind.
Does she have sisters?
She does not. In X-Men Evolution, which is a cartoon, I believe they do give her a sister, but that's not like Earth 616 canon. to get really nerdy on you.
Well, it is NPR, Nerd Public Radio. James, in terms of, I mean, we could do a whole hour on comics.
We sure could.
We sure could, especially with the three of you. But in terms of, if we're talking about either Black joy or Black liberation or Black identity, how do you see comics? And even just what we've been talking about.
Well, I think you know, the comics have a powerful way of opening up doors for people to project their subjectivity into a particular character. I mean, that's kind of the purpose of it. And that's what Arielle's talking about, which is an opportunity to see yourself in a heroic character, which for too many young Black folks, those opportunities are denied when you look at mainstream American popular culture. And so comics have always sort of been in the margins. I mean, you wouldn't think that now, given the kind of centralized attention and the kind of films you see now. But when we were growing up, you couldn't imagine they could even make the kind of films they make right now. So so comics were always a bit on the margins. And because of that, as a sort of cultural product that thrived within the margins, people who were in the margins always identified with it. Yeah. But it's only now in the 21st century that comic book companies are starting to catch up to that fact. And so you're seeing a systematic diversification of major superheroes. But Storm is a little bit of an outlier because she's before all of that and absolutely unique, inspiring to me, too, as a young Black boy reading comics. She was the leader of the X-Men. The X-Men, remember, is a comic book that really is a metaphor for race in America. It's essentially an extended replete with, you know, Professor X and the MLK Dream and Magneto and the sort of more radical Malcolm X figure. So many civil rights touchstones there, but not a lot of Black characters. Storm made an intervention into that metaphor that was really empowering for women and for people of color. So comics are power. Again, culture can't solve all of our political problems, but it creates space for us to work through some really challenging issues.
I was talking with Sophia about this idea of untold. I mean, whether what we're talking about or the three of you are talking about, joy, whether that is an untold or unexpressed story. You want to speak to that, Camille?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, part of what I was able to share in my story was that it's an incomplete narrative if all we talk about is the pain and the suffering, and that has its place. I actually think we need to discuss the rage that also accompanies the pain more.
The rage.
And there's a fantastic artist. Her name is Camille Rashid. And she did an installation called How to Suffer Politely. And this idea that we always have to be very stoic and kind of gracious and patient in that pain. But that is incomplete if we do not also talk about the ways in which we love and how our love can also be a model for how we're able to maintain these bonds under such extraordinarily difficult, just circumstances. I think it's almost otherworldly the way we are able to, you know, acknowledge the pain that we experience, but we can also laugh. I mean, if anyone is in any way involved or engaged in Black Twitter, that is the place that you go.
Yes.
I've heard some people say, where is that? Like, how do you? I'm like, if you don't know where it is,
you mean like, how do I live there?
Right. Or how do I get there? How do I find out? And it's like, you got to follow the breadcrumbs a little bit.
Yeah, you do.
But that I think that's a demonstration of, you know, under everything that we're living with now, that I can wake up in the morning and laugh by just kind of looking at what people are doing as far as like parodying different things that happen.
Yes.
But we just have this extraordinary ability to do that. And so not to remain in a place of suffering, but also bring in love and laughter and how we live like very fully.
Let me just reintroduce everybody. That's Camille Rashid. She's the founder, president of the Muslim Wellness Foundation. Also with us, Arielle Johnson. She is the owner of Amalgam Comics and Coffee House in the Kensington section of Philadelphia. And James Peterson is a director of Africana Studies, associate professor of English at Lehigh University, a contributor to MSNBC, host of WHYY's podcast, The Remix, and he will be co-hosting an event tonight about Black joy. You can go to whyy.org/events to find out about what's going to happen here at the station and also how to get tickets. And you can join our conversation bunch of different ways. You can text us or you can call our comment line 267-405-2006. We will play those comments on the air. Please keep them brief. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. James, let me go back to you. I don't know how many times you've been a guest on Radio Times over the years, but it's often about politics and problems and violence and police brutality and all of that.
Yeah.
Is that sort of the go-to narrative you think that too many people have?
Well, I think not with your show, Marty. I mean, what we're trying to do on Radio Times is kind of work through topical political issues having to do with race. Those things have to be worked through and talked about, and they're complicated issues. I do believe, though, that in America there is an insatiable appetite for black pathology. And so in America, if you're showing black pain and black death, it's very consumable. Obviously, when we see images of black death circulating, particularly at the hand of unarmed citizens at the hands of law enforcement, those are awful and traumatic events for folks who are seeing those things. That's not always the case, unfortunately. And so the reason why this is so disruptive, the reason why this is so powerful to be talking about black joy is because we're actually in a moment right now where there's tremendous black pain and tremendous black anguish and anxiety about the current administration and the different sort of racialized policies that have already been put into effect. The Muslim ban being one of those things, the different kinds of ideology we've seen coming out of this administration, coming out of this president, and even as a candidate, those things create a tremendous amount of anxiety. And so Sophia's idea that we can make an intervention by lifting up the concept of black joy is really, really powerful. And just to Camila's point here, you know, some of these things are being worked out in social media. We laugh and joke about black Twitter, but it serves a really powerful purpose because the memes that get created become tools for us to work through really complicated issues. You might have seen the image of the historically black college university presidents taking the photo op with yes. President Trump yesterday. A lot of folks feeling anxiety about that, not knowing how to respond to it. Another version of the image comes out that has Kellyanne Conway in the photo, and all of a sudden it becomes a meme. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, there's all this discourse. There's an opening of dialogue and a way for people to respond to their anxiety in that original photo. So there is empowerment and liberation in black joy. It's just about finding the spaces and the ways to get at that in a moment where, or in moments where it's very, very difficult to discover it.
Well, and going back to you, Ariel, I'm thinking just how comic books have been so political over the years. I mean, whether they are comic books with black characters or comic books written by Jews, who of course created a number of these superheroes going back into the 20th century, that they are more than just entertainment. They are a powerful statement.
Oh, yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, you know, comic books are a legitimate medium. So just, you know, as with anything else, it is reflecting what's going on, you know, at the time. There are you know, comic books, Faith is one where it's discussing body image and you know, the comic book Black, which is
it's awesome comic.
Yeah, and it's and I mean, it is unapologetically addressing the issue of, you know, violence, like sanctioned violence against black bodies, and you know, this idea of, you know, when police officers kind of recount their interaction with black young men, usually, you know, and kind of attributing these traits to them, like, oh, they were, I couldn't stop them. They were superhuman. He was so huge, you know, like, you know, like they are more than human.
Some of these comic book characters,
right?
But it's literally called superhuman bias.
Yeah, and so that is what Black is addressing. Like, this is a world where only black people have superpowers. So imagine, like, if that perceived threat was a real threat. And the number one issue, it's a kid in a red hoodie with his hands up, but he is bulletproof. So he's got guns pointed at him, but he's a bulletproof young man. So it's, I mean, again, it's just, it's powerful. And, you know, at a time when we need it, and I do think being, you know, in comic book form, kind of opens a conversation, you know, black people are not the only people that buy that book. And so I think it's an opportunity.
There you go. Let me read some comments, some tweets from Nathan. Black joy, being able to embrace and celebrate all parts of your black body, culture, and experience. A tweet from Sheila. Enjoying everyone's stories. My black joy is being true to myself, the interior as well as the exterior, unapologetic. A tweet from Rashida. Creative resilience, specifically through laughter and fellowship as a means of healing. A tweet from Dr. Kelly, black joy sustains us. So on and on it goes. Absolutely. I was thinking about this, and I don't want to make too much of it, but I was thinking about the Academy Awards. Sorry. Late.
Let's go there.
I happen to be very happy that Moonlight walked away with Best Picture.
Yes.
But the mix-up, which is, you know, here's this moment, in certain ways, of black joy, which
Absolutely.
Is this unbelievable film about black people, made by black people, is it's not an afterthought, but it was a goof. It was a snafu. And I wonder, Rashida, it looks like you want to say something.
Yeah, I mean, I think as someone who's a psychologist in training, I have to wonder how much of that was just very kind of subconscious and subversive of that moment. But I think what was actually infuriating to me was that then the story became about the mix-up when – you know, when they thought, when that cast had thought they had, you know, lost to La La Land, very gracious. You know, you didn't see kind of stunned looks and, oh, my gosh, how could they win? And I remember seeing the director almost put his hand over his heart, like, how could, like, we actually won. This happened. And so there's tears and there's joy. And so that story, again, I feel like if we cannot also talk about the hard work that they put into this and really being committed, not just to the project, but to each other. I mean, that really kind of just shines through. But it was this really incredible, fantastic moment that, again, was overshadowed, I would say, by kind of white entitlement. And so having to
even
assert
though the producer of La La Land.
One producer was quite gracious, but the other producer, the last producer to read his thank yous, already knew that they hadn't won. He still went through the process. So there is one producer, who I think it was Horowitz, who said,
you won.
You guys
you
won, no joke. But the other producer actually read his thank yous, even though that sense of entitlement was performed right there on the stage. Yes. And yes, the story has to be about the film. This is the little film that could. Shoestring budget. I must have done like 5 talkbacks for this film between New York and Philadelphia just because we were trying to get the word out. It is a beautiful film. Regardless of your politics, regardless of your stance on like LGBTQ issues, it's just a beautiful film, beautifully done. It deserved to win, and the story should be about that. But it's like the hollow prize, right? Which is this political science concept that once black folks get into office, you know, then it's, you know, everything's emptied out. And so it's almost like the hollow prize. You know, we get this great film. It deserves to win. It wins. But then it's obscured by the stories around, you know, what the mix-up was in the gaffe.
Let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation with James Peterson, Ariel Johnson, and Camila Rashad. And again, you can join the conversation, call or text our comment line, 267-405-2006. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at @WHYY Radio Times, talking about Black joy in this hour of Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with my guests about Black joy. And I should add, there's an event tonight here at WHYY to carry on this conversation. You can go to whyy.org/events to find out more about it. James Peterson will be the co-host tonight. He's also Director of Africana Studies, Associate Professor of English at Lehigh University, host of the WHYY podcast, The Remix, a contributor to MSNBC. Ariel Johnson is the owner of Amalgam Comics and Coffee House, that's in the Kensington section of Philadelphia, the first African-American woman to open a comic store on the East Coast. And also with us, Camila Rashad. She's the founder and president of the Muslim Wellness Foundation, and she serves as the Fellow for Spirituality, Wellness, and Social Justice at the University of Pennsylvania. And I have to say, our conversations both on and off air have been really interesting. And again, call our comment line or text us at 267-405-2006. Let me read a couple of comments. An email from Raquel. She says, I'm Afro-Latina and was raised in Los Angeles, where I never saw another Black Spanish-speaking person. Mm-hmm. I smiled when I finally found another Black person in the world who spoke Spanish when I moved to Massachusetts, which tells you a lot. I mean, in certain ways, this is our country, James Peterson. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the world that we live in.
Yeah, well, it's also really, really important. And this is kind of my mission, particularly on college campuses, for Black folks to sort of acknowledge and embrace their own diversity within Blackness, right? And so the Afro-Latinx movement is a really big part of that, and it's great to see our Latino brothers and sisters really wrestling with the construction of race within their communities and really sort of identifying as Black. You know, Rosa Clemente, who's a great activist and who ran as VP candidate for the Green Party in 2008, has always identified as a Black Puerto Rican, and that's because she traces her genealogy back to Africa. And so there are a lot of challenges with doing that within in the Latino community. And so seeing folks embrace that is really, really powerful. But Black folks in general have to embrace our own diversity. We're not all African Americans, right? We come from a lot of different sort of experiences. And I think embracing that is a really, really important part of what Black liberation has to be.
And I wonder, Ariel, whether that's also reflected in comics, in comic books.
Yeah, I mean,
it always was written. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. No, Miles Morales. So the new incarnation of Spider-Man. He is black and Latino. Like that is his makeup. And you know, young black man. I believe his mom is black. Mm-hmm. Again, like comics books are reflecting that, and those characters are present. It's just a matter of, in a world where, you know, he is Spider-Man, so he's overshadowed by Peter Parker for the people who don't want to let that go. You know, I mean, and I feel like, you know, Miles is his own character. It's not like they made Peter a black man. It's like he is a different person, but still it's, you know, in the grander scope of like the comic book lore, Peter Parker will always be first. I mean, hence, you know, the new movie, I was kind of hoping that they, since they're with Civil War, that they're relaunching, that they'd go Miles, but it, you know, again, we get another Peter story. Mm-hmm. And I mean, so this is like the third.
Yeah, they're not working.
Incarnation of Peter in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, as opposed to, it's like, well, let's try something different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm also curious, Camila, and to you, James, and perhaps to you, mm-hmm. Ariel, as well, about what you tell your children about Black Joy.
Oh, wow. You know, this is an interesting...
For young people, perhaps.
It's an interesting moment for me because my oldest daughter is 14, and I've seen her transformation even over the last 2 years. And so, you know, we have a small library in my home. And so she set up a stack of books that she said she wanted to read and was like, you know, Angela Davis, Women, Race, and Class, and Huey. Wow. She wants to read the autobiography of Malcolm X. And this kind of
I
random book.
I wonder
who
her mom is.
But she had one book, and it was The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. Mm. And I said, one of these things don't seem to belong. And she said, well, I want to read a book from a white perspective. And so for her, and this is what I really love about comics, is that it also gives us the creative space to even think about ourselves in different ways. And so for her, it was, these are always characters and stories that I read, but I want to see myself in Huey P. Newton. She was like, he was really charismatic. I'm interested in that. Mm-hmm. You know, she's like, Angela Davis is just brilliant. I want to read about her. And so being able to talk about agency and empowerment and how you want to be in the world, I think is a fundamental part of joy, because it requires, you know, so much assertiveness and confidence that we don't get externally. You know, it has to happen within us and within our homes and spaces. And so to watch my children really embrace who they are, both as black and as being Muslim, you know, so both their religious and racial identities really being under siege and under attack, how she says, you know what? I'm going to be Angela Davis and Huey P. Newton, and I want to find out about this Huckleberry character too. Yeah.
Do you think there's enough of that? And by that, I mean James Peterson, and just enough people reading about other people that are different from themselves.
No, there's not enough of that. I'm lit, guys. So we need much more of that. But Camila's right. You have to love black youth and love on black youth, because black youth are systematically demonized. Mm-hmm. They're demonized in our school system. They are demonized in the media. And they're obviously demonized in our criminal justice and our justice systems. And so as a parent of two black children, you have to really be careful about the environments that they're in and what they're exposed to. And you have to love them and love on them constantly. It seems like you should just know that as a parent, but you have to do that with a certain kind of intentionality, mm-hmm. because of what they're bombarded with on a day in and day out basis. So we try to model for them what joy is. And mm-hmm. I've given them the kinds of things that have brought me joy, like music and comics. I've given those things to my kids, but you also have to do things with them and experience things with them, travel with them. And so you can reinforce how joy is modeled. Yeah. Unfortunately, to be young and black in America in the 21st century is to systematically be engaged with a reflection of yourself that is negative and pathological. Parents have a steep uphill climb to fight those institutional forces, but that's what's required to sort of model black joy for kids today.
And Ariel, I'm thinking of the customers that you might have at your store. I don't know whether they range from, you know, kids to adults.
They do. I mean, and I get a lot of black young people in the shop. I get a lot of girls in the shop. And for me, what I always say, I don't have any children, but I do have a niece. It's and I hope I am living by example to unapologetically be who you are, and don't let anyone else tell you who you are. Because, again, as James was saying, it's like we live in a society that demonizes Black youth and is constantly telling them what they are, and it's always negative. And it's, we have to like take that back and say, no, you are you figure out who you are. Don't let someone else dictate that to you. And when you figure it out, be that unapologetically. And so I think and creating a space for them to feel safe to explore who they are is important. And that's honestly one of the most powerful things that I've seen in the shop. We have we are close to several schools, and we have groups of young people that come like pretty much every day after school and they're, you know, making RPGs, like making RPGs, which are role-playing games and things like that. But again, things that, you know, maybe in the outside world, being young Black boys, they would be ostracized for. But in that space, they feel safe to be who they are, even if it's a little off kilter. And I think that's just a beautiful thing. And again, we need that space to figure it out, as opposed to living our lives on some path that's almost like predetermined.
Let me read a text from Alicia. She says, as an art teacher, I would love to bring a lesson celebrating Black joy to my classroom. But as a white woman, is it appropriate for me to lead a group of young African-American women through an art lesson that allows them to see their beauty and power?
Well,
let me start with you, Camille.
Yeah, I mean, as the mom of a 14-year-old, you know, I would say her role is to facilitate and to witness. So to ask them, how would they like to see themselves? You know, what would that look like, and have them construct it? I mean, providing some adult guidance. But I think what's appropriate there is to really give them the space and to, you know, to kind of hold that for them, to say, this, you deserve, you know, the opportunity and all of the resources to begin that exploration. How can I help you? I think that's the first question to ask.
Yeah, I would use the Inquirer series as a jump off point for them to read. And Camille is absolutely right. You know, for white folks who want to engage in that kind of work, I think it's always about self reflexivity and understanding where that space comes from for them. Like where they're, what space are they coming from to try to address the needs of people of other color, of people of color. And if it comes from a genuine space, if it's well researched and well thought out, and if it's sensible and sensitive, it can be effective. But she has a great series here with the Philadelphia Inquirer as a launching point for engaging her students.
Let me play another person who called into our comment line, and this is Lola.
My name is Lola. Time of joy for me. I can remember back during the times of the civil rights demonstrations. I'm that old. I was young at that time. And those were times of joy, the struggle. And we would get together in the evenings and sing and play guitar and just have a good time. And we'd all did this from New York City, and we would have sympathy marches and things for the people in the South. So that was a real, I remember that as a time of real joy for me and my comrades.
Lola, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. That's a powerful call. And she says, I am that old, but obviously telling us about the civil rights movement, which obviously had to struggle against so much, but the joy of that.
One scene in Selma that I really appreciated was that moment that they're gathering and someone's cooking and they're laughing and kind of joking. And I said that was important to tell and to show, because it was not always kind of organizing some kind of action and protest, but the ways in which they were able to kind of heal and nourish one another in those like very celebratory moments.
I mean, even the We Shall Overcome, I'm thinking of all the, you know, the anthems essentially.
No, obviously there's music for the movement. I mean, this is so complicated, right? That, you know, struggle has been a feature of the Black experience from the moment we were stripped from the continent of Africa. And when you have that as one of the more enduring aspects of your experience, you do have to identify and locate joy within struggle. So it sounds counterintuitive, but the caller, I think, is nailing that. The community building, even the relief that one feels that you're engaging in struggle to resist the powerful forces that are trying to destroy you, there is some joy in that.
Let me read a text or a message from Annette John Hall, who used to work at the Inquirer. She's now here at WHYY. She says, Black joy is hearing full-throated laughter at the kitchen table after the last piece of cornbread. Everybody's safe, happy, and full. Yes, I mean, you know, that's a magic moment,
fantastic.
I guess. But do you think there are, as I said, as the white person sitting here, but do you think there are also universals? I mean, that there are joyful moments, experiences that we can all share. I mean, that it isn't black or white or Latino or Asian or African or Indian.
Well, I mean, just
this is Ariel.
Yes. With the current administration and just the protests that are coming out of it, for me, that was just a moment of collective joy that, you know, these things that are happening, and not necessarily to you or to a group that you identify with, but that the people are coming out to stand up and say, you know, this is not who we are and this is not the direction we want to go in. That was really encouraging mm-hmm. to me. Just again, at the same time, because simultaneously we're seeing so many horrible things, you know, directed at people of certain groups. But then to see this counter of people coming out and standing for people who may not necessarily be able to stand for themselves in some circumstances, I think is a beautiful thing.
Camila, yeah. You want to add to that? Then James.
I think what I would add to what Ariel said is we also have to kind of be careful of maybe universalizing it too much in that there are moments in which Black joy isn't recognized enough or mm-hmm. is not seen to have as much value. So I think there are times, again, where people have to, if they've always been given the floor and they have that privilege, to be able to step back and invite other people in to share that with the world.
James, you want to add?
I had the same point. No, that these things are not opposed to each other or mutually exclusive, which is to say Black joy or the celebration of it is almost like the Black Lives Matter movement, right? It's a intervention that we're making because Black joy has not been celebrated enough. It has not been identified enough so that it can be a part of that collective, universal, mm-hmm. human sense of joy. They're not opposed to each other in any way. It's an enhancement of what human enjoyment can be. And I think mm-hmm. identifying all the ways in which folks who are oppressed or folks who have been systematically left out can identify moments of joy actually contributes to the sort of human project in ways that we can't even account for in this moment.
And in 20 seconds or less, what do you hope to accomplish tonight, James Peterson?
Hopefully tonight we'll have an opportunity to continue this incredible conversation. We'll have other writers who contributed to the series, included Kendra, the Family Soul, and Feminista Jones, great thinkers and great writers. Mm-hmm. So we hope folks will come out and continue this incredible conversation.
And future for your comic store?
We are moving forward. We're in year two now. I would say follow us on Facebook. We have a number of events coming up. Right, this weekend we have a pop-up shop that's celebrating the forgotten women of the civil rights movement. So it's t-shirts and apparel, but definitely it's Saturday 10 to 5, so definitely come and check that out.
And finally, word from you.
Yes. I mean, I would encourage everyone to even take just 60 seconds out of their day to think about what brings them joy, what brings them gratitude, and find solace in that and share it with someone else because they may also need to hear your story.
Well, on that note, my thanks to all three of you for joining us today on Radio Times. A really terrific discussion. And
yes,
I appreciate you all being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're
thank
welcome.
You for having me.
Let me just tell you who has been a guest on Radio Times. Camila Rashad is the founder president of the Muslim Wellness Foundation, serves as the fellow for spirituality, wellness, and social justice at the University of Pennsylvania. Ariel Johnson, owner of Amalgam Comics and Coffee House in the Kensington section of Philadelphia. James Peterson is director of Africana Studies at Lehigh University, host of the WHYY podcast, The Remix, and co-host for tonight's event. Go to whyy.org/events to find out how to get tickets and more about what's going to be happening here tonight at WHYY. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out much more about this program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. And we took pictures of our guests, so you can check them out, including checking out Ariel's beautiful hair there. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you for joining us.